Rory Masango on 702.
For the curious, streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
14 minutes after 9, it's the weird and the wonderful Anna Breitenbach is my guest. She's a South African animal communicator. Anna, good evening to you. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. I'm trying to get my mind around the idea of an animal communicator. What does that mean?
Well, before you get your mind around that, let me just change the ballpark a little.
Yeah.
It really is interspecies communication, which means connecting with more than just animals, but beyond that to all the different plant species and ecosystems and, dare I say it, microorganisms. So
Wait a second. So you don't only speak to horses, right?
Oh, no.
But you speak to radish as well.
Yep, radish, trees, viruses, bacteria, parasites, cats, elephants, ants. And it's very easily explained through quantum physics. So without going into a science lesson, but any listeners who are interested in finding out more about that, that's the place to look. Telepathy has long been proved. In fact, since the 1880s in both the US and the UK, universities were doing research into so-called telepathy between humans. Of course, like designing those experiments to prove it to be nothing but trickery and false goings on and pretense. But instead, the experiments proved that telepathy is real. And it has also been proved to extend beyond just human to human.
011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. So clearly you can hear that Anna doesn't sound like a quack, right? She doesn't sound like she's insane. Right. And she's speaking about something even beyond what I thought we'd be talking about. She speaks about interspecies communication. So let's just break it down for us, Anna. What are we talking about here? When you say communication, what are you talking about? Do you sit around with a bush of berries and start having a conversation? What do you do?
It's got nothing to do with vocalizations, with sounds coming from, the animal. For example, if we are talking about animals, it's nothing to do with how something looks or its facial expression or behavior. It is about the silent energetic emissions that are always coming off every being. For us humans, too, every thought we're having and every emotion we're experiencing is sending off an emission that can be photographed by some forms of scientific photography, like Kuhlian photography. And so everything is just busy radiating its state of health, its intrinsic design. It's just being broadcast out into, everywhere all the time. And when we make our own selves and our own minds quiet enough, we can then perceive, we can pick up these signals from any being that we place our attention upon. Because as we walk around in our day, we are constantly walking through this sea of all these signals all the time. Everything is just radiating, what it is. But we don't notice that. We're not sensitive enough to notice that. But when we choose to direct our focus and our mental attention to something, then it's like the signal becomes more clear. Then it becomes like a phone call in a way, or like a sort of two-way radio, because this form of communication really is two-way. It's not a weird psychic reading on an animal or on a tree. It's actually a two-way sending and receiving of data.
Okay. I want to paraphrase what you've just said to me just to get a sense of whether or not I'm with you, right?
Sure.
So it's not just a matter of you walking down the street with your Jack Russell talking about the politics of the world.
Yeah. No.
it's about actually understanding the primordial language of all living things, the pre-language understanding of all living things that doesn't necessarily speak through the agency of grammar and language, but speaks through pre-language, pre-conceptual forms of understanding.
And absolutely.
And that is how we understand, for example, whether a particular tree is how old and what it's going through, rather than a conversation about the prices of bog roll at Woolworths.
Absolutely. The non-humans don't engage in small talk or theorizing about scenarios. They're all very present. As we'll know, just from looking at any dog with a wagging tail, they're very present and just real with, you know, what is going on. You summarize it very well. It is the pre-language sort of sheer, you know, just essence of being. And on the pre-language front, we humans, before we developed, you know, vocal languages and began to break up the world into things we can describe and objectify everything, yep, we too connected automatically. Everybody did in these ways. Yes,
I see it with children.
Yeah,
I see
exactly.
It with very young children. I have a 3-year-old boy. He still communicates in pretty much the way that you're suggesting. Of course, now he's discovered the world of words, the idea of self, and all of those kinds of things. And so there's the corruption of the old ways of communication that were fascinating to watch because they were pre-language, as I've just said. Now, talk to me about how you have these conversations with other species, for example.
Yes, it's about becoming quiet within myself so that I can go beyond my own mind thinking even. What that means practically is I just have to really sit very quietly. For me, it helps if I close my eyes so that I'm not distracted by what I'm seeing. And then I just focus on my natural breathing rhythm as a way to, you know, give the mind a center point. And it's much more important than a mental activity. It's much more important to come into a feeling space, a sense of respect for or care for that one that you're communicating with. All I do is I bring my awareness down into the sort of vague feeling in the center of my chest where I certainly hope my heart is. And I visualize, you know, my heart opening or sending out a sort of a greeting, an energetic greeting to the one I want to connect with. And once I have done that energetic, you know, hello or greeting, it helps my mind to just silently imagine a question, because that helps focus my attention into what I'm inquiring about. So I might ask the bird that's hiding away under a bush. I might just say, you know, why are you hanging out over there? You know, what's making you be there? And I will get a response from their perspective. So it's a very...
And what is that response? What does it say? What is a little sparrow under the...
Yeah.
What typically would it say?
Well, this is an interesting thing. One can't really say, one can't generalize, because it is an individual-to-individual conversation. Mm. It might be that the little sparrow is hiding away from the raven or the crow that's flying through the air. It could be trying to avoid something, in which case I will get the feeling of being hunkered down and creeping away and the sense of anxiety and hyper-alertness in myself. Because when we communicate with the animal, we experience their feelings within ourselves. That's how we know what they're going through, is we very temporarily and often in quite a subtle and short way, we experience their feeling. If I'm communicating, sometimes I help out veterinary surgeons who are really struggling to diagnose a difficult case, and they feel about their animal clients like, gosh, if only they could talk, because they can't figure out what's wrong, and, you know, the animal's getting worse and worse. So I simply ask the animal the question. I say, please show me your body on mine. And then I forget about my thinking, and I turn my awareness to my own body. And right away, my attention might be taken to a very bad stomach ache or a feeling in my right knee. And then when I describe the nature of that feeling in the right knee, like a dull ache that's only there when I move, then the vet, who is the medical person, not myself, the vet can say, oh, wow, that's a good place to go look, or that explains it, or when they know what tests to go and do to find the proper diagnosis.
Anna Breitenbach, I've got to confess something. When we were going to start this conversation, I thought I'm going to speak to some crazy quack. What you're saying to me makes absolute sense to me. Absolute sense to me.
Great.
So I want to go back perhaps to the theories out there about telepathy that you started off by talking about, just so that those of us who, you know, depend and need some sort of scientific verification of whatever it is that we're talking about, maybe go back to that. But what I am hearing you say is that we all creatures have a way by which we can communicate with each other at an empathetic level.
That is why it's called interspecies communication, because it's happening all the time between different species.
Yes.
Indeed, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the science, the history.
Yes, the most recent scientist several decades ago now, who in modern times proved telepathy between humans and non-humans, is named Rupert Sheldrake. He, at the time, was with Cambridge University. His website is sheldrake.org, S-H-E-L-D-R-A-K-E.org, and he's very famous for his rounds of experiments and professional, you know, peer-reviewed papers and books. One of the most famous studies was called Dogs Who Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home, and it was proved that dogs would start to behave differently or go wait at the door at the garden gate when people were still miles away and at very random times of day when the researchers would make them just suddenly pick up their keys and go home.
Have you ever watched the movie Hachiko?
No.
Oh, you got to watch the movie Hachiko. you got to seriously watch the movie Hachiko with Richard Gere and I think it's a chow chow, a Japanese chow chow.
Okay.
Oh, that's exactly what it's all about. Anyways, okay, go ahead.
So many sort of children's movies do address this, like the Thornberrys, I think, too. You know, the child characters are using telepathy to connect with and to help the other beings, rescue animals from zoos or from the illegal wildlife trade. This is something that we all can do. As you've already mentioned, we all used to before we turned 2 years old and began to learn language.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, you know, when we grow up, it's quite a thing for us to be told by our parents, by our teachers, by other adults, that what we're directly experiencing isn't real. Like, don't be silly. Dogs can't talk, so don't tell me that Fido's got a sore paw. That make-believe horse that you have as a friend is just an imaginary friend. It's not real. And eventually, all of us as children learn to just shut up and not say what we are experiencing because we don't get agreement from the adults. And there's so much that we directly know. And then we just kind of get educated out of it by the modern system that separates us from the non-humans.
011-883-0702. Let me invite the callers. Anna, 011-883-0702. Can't wait to hear what Anna has been hearing from the coronavirus. 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. There are legends in many, many, books. The Bible, for example, speaks of the burning bush experience with Moses. The donkey that spoke to one or other prophets, false or not, about a particular issue, of the donkey that knew that a particular prophet would be coming in a particular way, particular position. We've heard of St. Francis of Assisi, who said to have had similar sort of. Is that what you're talking about? Is that what the reference in history would be referring to in terms of interspecies communications?
Yes, in the Christian history, absolutely. There's biblical examples. Although, again, a lot of the language that humans use tends to add in other meaning that is not necessarily what happened at the time. So St. Francis was said to be preaching to the birds, as if they needed lessons on how to be good little birds. I've had the privilege of going to Assisi twice, and actually up to the monastery where he lived, and I've sat under the very same tree where he sat, which is now sort of bolted into the hillside so it doesn't fall over. And I've sat under that very tree where he apparently preached to the birds. So there was no preaching going on. There was just a lovely communion of beings. Yes, he was communicating with the birds. You know, hanging out with any animal in this space of energetic communication is just like being on a long road trip with a best friend and you're not even saying anything. It's a lovely, comfortable silence where you're just enjoying being together without even needing to exchange any thoughts. In the pagan world, it's very common various rituals, the rain dances or connecting with earth element and fire. Yeah. It's all the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. What is the weirdest species you've ever communicated with?
That's a question I've not been asked before.
I could tell you what is the weirdest species I've ever communicated.
What's
with.
That?
Human beings.
Well, no, that I cannot do. They're unreachable.
But I mean, have you had a conversation with an amoeba, for example?
I did in one of my early case studies. I have found some of the most unusual conversations to be with insects. I remember the first time I communicated with a bee to find out what it needed. And to my immense surprise, I got to borrow the experience of seeing, literally seeing the world through a bee's eyes. Now, insects' eyes are compound eyes. Each eyeball is like a lot of little miniature mosaic, pieces of seeing bits. And it was amazing to see through this insect's eyes. I could suddenly borrow the experience of being able to see to the side of me, not only in front of me as a human, and everything that my brain was perceiving was in this mosaic-like fashion, and I could see ultraviolet. And when I went to read up afterwards, I discovered that bees can see in the ultraviolet, part of the color spectrum. So it's wonderful to borrow some of these animals' experiences. In recent months, I've had interesting conversations with octopus about what food choices it makes. I've had conversations with sharks about how they feel about surfers. I've had conversations.
What do they feel about surfers? What do sharks say about surfers?
Well, the great white sharks who do hang out close to the coastline have several challenges, and the biggest of those is a lack of food. There's the biggest portion of their diet of medium-sized fish, which is all that they showed me, is essentially gone. And so they're very competitive with each other. They're very competitive with each other for very limited food resources. So that's one fact. Then you put a bunch of surfers or water users, out in the ocean enjoying themselves, who can often be quite competitive with each other to try to get the wave. In fact, a good surfer is often one who's considered to have, hunted the best wave.
Yes.
And sharks are drawn in and attracted by other predatory or competitive energy in the water. So the humans, between the surfers are getting quite competitive, and the sharks are a bit like, hey.
There's a nice looking morsel there.
And they come in to investigate. They just come to investigate, at which point humans generally find themselves able to walk on water.
All right, so Anna Breitenbach is my guest. She's funny too, folks. 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. She is an interspecies communicator. I want to take a couple of calls, Anna. Ingrid is in Honeydew. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi, Orbs. I've got a little dog. He's developed a very bad skin infection, and I think there are three things his skin has been bothered with. I want to know how I can help him, because everything I've tried so far is not really working. So how do I communicate with him so he can tell me how I can help him?
Anna?
Yeah, very, very good question. Thank you for caring enough for him in the first place. And two things to say. Firstly, it can be most difficult to communicate with our own animals, for me with my cats too, because we're so close to them already. We have a whole lot of knowledge about them that can make us not sure whether a moment of communication is fresh information or just what our mind already knew or suspected. And then sometimes we can be clouded by our own wish to really, really hear them or our own attachment to their answers. So it can be helpful perhaps to use another professional communicator or something, but certainly please do give it a go yourself first. I would suggest sitting quite far away from him so you're not informed by his facial expression or anything at the time. Close your eyes And then, as I mentioned a little earlier, just silently convey to him the simple request, you know, please show me your body on mine. And you might get a feeling for the exact nature of the skin condition, like how deep down here below the skin the feeling is it hot or cold, numb or tingly? And then here's the next question I suggest. Ask him what makes it that way or what the cause is. Because to me, the most astounding thing about non-humans is that they seem to have this greater wisdom about what's going on with themselves. They understand the causes. They really do. And it leave several minutes after each question to just sit quietly and learn to ignore whatever ideas might come through your head and just keep sitting, watching your breathing, and maybe one idea will come back a few times, in which case that would be the one to trust. And then, of course, the last question to ask him would be, what will make it better? And don't expect the answer to come in any certain way. I've asked animals before about skin conditions, and you know, when I've asked what's caused it, I've got a mental image of, you know, sort of bright green plastic with black writing, and I haven't understood it at all. But when I've told the person, they have said, well, the dog food bag is bright green with black writing. And it turns out that the skin condition was caused by pet food, which is very common, by the way. The first thing to do with chronic skin conditions is to get your animals onto a completely grain-free pet food.
Yeah, I've been making his own food since he was a puppy.
Fantastic. Well, then there's something going on. Yes, yeah.
Ingrid, I'm going to let you go. Will you try some of that out, Ingrid?
Yes, I'll do that. Thanks so much.
All right, Ingrid and Honeydew. Andrew is in Pretoria. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thanks, man. Go ahead.
In a sense, I want to confirm what the lady's talking about in giving a couple of examples. One is, have you ever had a bright idea, thinking about it really hard, thinking about it really well, and then somebody else do it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, it means we're all interconnected in some way.
Yeah.
It's happened to me often. For instance, when I first met my wife, driving along the road far away from her, I felt like I want to phone her. And then she rings me at the same time.
Yeah.
You see, so you can call it telepathy. All my dogs that I have and all the animals that I've been with, that I worked with, and I come off a farm, was one instance, my one dog came to me, and he came lying down next to me, and I could see in his eyes and in his mind that he actually was hurting tremendously. Mm. And it was his last day, and he had to go out.
Sure.
So, I hear you, Andrew. I hear you. Thanks very much for your call. Much appreciated.
And thank you for hearing, so to speak, and thank you for receiving what they are conveying. That's the best service we can be to those non-humans that we live with, as animals or those we come across, even just little ants or a line of ants walking across the pathway. Can we just care enough to think of them and their lives and their needs and take an extra big step or move around them? Can we let our animals go when it's time, instead of hanging on to them because we want them to stay because we're going to miss them? If they come and let us know it's their time, can we love them enough to let them go?
It appears that we are trapped in our own hubris as human beings. We're trapped in our own, our own human-centric understanding of the world and the universe. And that's partly the reason why we are unable to hear these messages. Because the more I think about it, the more I let my mind be free of the encumbrance of human logic, I realize that there's a whole lot of communication taking place. When the wildebeest in the great savannah are running from one direction to the other, when the birds migrate from one direction to the other, there's obviously an intelligence taking place there that we can tap into and understand. But obviously, Anna, when we speak of communication with other species, it's a different frequency. It's a different conversation, and perhaps a lot more fundamental than the conversations of human beings that are laden with all sorts of of hubris.
Yes, it is very fundamental, and it is that simple. But we make it more complicated, and we think there's some, you know, very special technique, or one has to be, you know, qualified in something to do this. Not at all. As you say, it's very, very fundamental, and any of us can experience this just tomorrow when it's daylight again. Whenever you walk outside or encounter your animal for the first time, just convey an energetic greeting. Just the feeling of acknowledgement and greeting. And I promise you, you will see their behavior change. Those birds that used to fly away the moment you stepped out will maybe not fly away so quickly. And your animals might treat you differently. But don't expect them to. It really is fundamental. And it is this interconnection that's there the whole time. Unfortunately, even a lot of animal lovers project human qualities and human emotions onto the animals without even knowing it. And, you know, for example, you'll never hear me speak about a pet having an owner. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous to be able to own another life form.
Yes.
And you'll never hear me speak about, you know, pets having mommies or daddies, or me being the mommy of my cats. I mean,
yes,
for heaven's sake, that's just creepy. So, you know, we are a different species. The non-humans are their own sentient, meaning self-aware beings. They can make their own choices.
And, I'm reminded about people that I know that we would call people with green fingers, for example, people that seem to have a very interesting relationship with plants. I remember that, I used to have a grandfather. When I say grandfather, a cousin brother to my grandfather, who was very, very, very good with plants, knew what to plant where. And it was interesting how he used to speak. He says, no, this plant doesn't want to be planted here. It wants to be planted there. And again, it brings back memories of that kind of conversation to say that, that particular plant doesn't want to be planted here. It doesn't like the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So are you referring to those kinds of communication? And would he have been having that kind of communication with that species?
Definitely. I don't have green fingers at all, and I don't know a thing about gardening. I'd been carrying seeds around for over a year, and I was leaving to go teach overseas for a month, and in my desperation, in my rush, I only had 1 hour before I had to go to the airport. I took some brown onion seeds in my left hand and some tomato seeds in my right hand, and I walked outside, and with the seeds in the left hand, I said to them, okay, got half an hour, tell me what you need and where you need to be planted. And I got very specific mental images of how deep down in the soil, you know, they wanted to be, and how much shade or sunlight they wanted in the day. So I hoed them into the ground there. Then to the seeds in the right hand, I asked the same sorts of questions and did what they said. And to my immense surprise, when I came back 5 weeks later, both were doing very, very well. And people who are gardeners, people who are organic farmers or permaculture or biodynamic farmers working with plants and with animals or livestock who have a good relationship, like Andrew, who was in farming, when you have a good relationship with your animals and you are, you know, co-creating your reality and you're respecting each other, the amazing conversations and the productivity is so much more improved. I volunteer some of my time to a fantastic reforestation initiative that's been going for several years throughout Africa, but based in South Africa, called Green Pop. And again, this year, in the first week of July, they'll be having their annual Festival of Action, where it's a week of fun and joyful hands-on, you know, in the ground, really deeply connecting in very practical ways to reforest parts of the areas in the garden that have been ravaged by fire and other atrocities. But it's about how we do these things. It's about how we connect with each other and with, you know, the more than human world as well. That's what true community means.
Have you had communication with extraterrestrial beings?
I definitely have had spontaneous sort of incoming senses of, it's so far from human, there's not even really a way to frame it in my own mind. But yes, I haven't had specific messages or instructions, but I've definitely had senses of their presence and a sense of their awareness about what's happening here. that that is so far from my human paradigm that I was unable to
decipher,
you know, give it
and
any,
decode, yeah,
any sort of sense or place. Yeah.
Yeah. 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. In a very strange way, Anna, I get you. You know, I hear you, and I get what you're saying. I suppose it is that strange interspecies connection. Talk to me about the virus world.
Mm.
I mean, here we are in an unprecedented time for planet Earth, humanity, the world. What is this phenomenon saying to you at the level of communication that you engage in? And have you had a conversation with the virus?
I've not had a conversation with this particular virus yet. I've had with others along the way, including those that have been visiting my own body, or the, you know, malaria, rickettsia parasites, and so on along the way. And I've always had those conversations with, you know, with respect and acknowledgement of their right to live as well. There's a wise elder in my field called Penelope Smith, and her website is easily findable, animaltalk.net. And she, back in January, wrote about her communication with the coronavirus, and it completely echoes you know, what connections I have had. And it speaks about the, you know, first of all, so far we've been speaking about connecting with an individual organism. But communication can also happen into a group or a species consciousness, you know, much like the elephant consciousness and what they even share within their kind. That's how they know how to follow old migratory patterns and so on.
Yes.
So speaking into the sort of collective consciousness of the coronavirus has revealed that, much like other viruses, its role, its purpose is to be kind of like one of Earth's recycling teams, to be doing both the cleaning up and attempting to restore balance, attempting to rebalance things that have got way out of kilter. So if we do look at really the bigger picture globally, it's pretty obvious that we humans have ironically been a little bit like a parasite, you know, to the Earth. We've been feeding off our host to the point of almost completely destroying the host, you know, using up all the resources in a very non-sustainable way. And the Earth's, you know, lungs are clogged, the waterways are clogged. By the way, all of those things have improved quite a lot for the planet in these recent weeks. So the roles of viruses and parasites are, in the greater scheme of things, to help rebalance things. What occurred to me about the coronavirus is the humans are very, and science in particular, is very quick to acknowledge the phenomenon of survival of the fittest. In fact, we hold that in quite, you know, high esteem. As humans, we try to become better athletically, and we perform in the arts and in, you know, in breeding animals or in agriculture. We look at survival of the fittest as being a very high principle. Suddenly, when something comes along which is going to, you know, threaten our species, or certainly the more weak and the vulnerable ones, might not make it through this, or will struggle a lot, you know, then suddenly we've got a problem with that.
Oh, the problem is fundamentally that we're going to die. You know, we
yeah.
want to live.
Well, and this is where we humans are also quite different to other animals. We humans are unique in our avoidance of death, our psychological avoidance of death, our attempts at all costs to try to extend our lives to be as long as possible. We humans are completely obsessed with length of life. And all the other living beings know that quality of life is what matters. And they don't see physical death as the end of everything, the final curtain. They just see physical death as simply dropping the body. But that their essential nature is just currently inhabiting a body, and when the body dies, well, you just don't have a body anymore, you know.
I'm understanding you to be suggesting, correct me if I'm wrong, that a virus like the coronavirus or any other virus is nothing more than the Earth's antibody.
That's a very good description. It's a naturally occurring phenomenon in the constant dynamic movement of life itself and all its forms to move towards balance. And it's not like some person called Earth dressed in a cape with a, you know, a long stick said, go forth, coronavirus, and kill those humans. There's no bad intention in it. There's no...
There's no value, ethical, moral issue here. This is simply, if I understand you correctly, a reaction to an imbalance.
Exactly, it's simply nature taking its course.
Yeah. And sometimes in the anthropomorphization of things, when we humanize things, when we humanize reality, when we humanize everything, and we take a pole position in the hierarchy of why things are, we imagine as human beings that everything is for our purpose and not that we are part of a greater purpose. And so the earth, life, finds a way of balancing itself out sometimes by the eradication of the very human being.
Yes, we human beings are absolutely suffering from a very large superiority complex. Mm. And the virus would balance things out and perhaps do away with quite a few human beings. And it will also make those human beings who don't physically die, it will make those human beings more resilient. Not because we're taking vaccines or chemicals or fighting this or stomping it out, but those of us who will develop our own natural immunity to the virus, perhaps, we will become resilient and stronger for it. And my other hope is that not only biologically will some of us become stronger as we integrate the new reality of this virus into our bodies, my other hope is that we also become wiser and a little more evolved as, you know, as evolution and adaptation happens in other ways as well.
Perhaps well, one of the conversations.
We will not take so many things for granted, and we might find different ways to make some decisions.
One of the conversations we're having in the final hour of this show that I've sort of primed is precisely that, to imagine for ourselves as to what is the result of this phenomenon, the coronavirus phenomenon. Is it another evolutionary step in mankind's evolutionary journey? What sort of economic systems are we likely to see post-coronavirus? Are we going to see even more events of this nature? And when you have the conversation with viruses and other species, do they know that they've got other cousins that might be coming through to sort things out?
They don't worry about future projections because they also don't judge us remarkably. You know, in the wild kingdoms don't judge us, and they're not sitting there thinking, well, you know, if this doesn't work, we're going to send our bigger brother to come and get you. But I wouldn't be surprised if that wouldn't happen. It's also, it would be so incredibly stupid of us for all of our, you know, self-inflated thinking that we're so intelligent. It would be so stupid of us to try and go back to business as usual.
Yep.
So, you know, there is that saying about your one definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result. This is a huge opportunity for us to shift things fundamentally. And maybe the system as we know it has to fall, has to break wide open for something else to be created.
Talk to me about how you got to understand how to decode the feelings, senses, energies that were coming to you. In other words, my sense is that many of us, maybe even all of us, are constantly getting this information that you have now been able to decode in a specific way to understand certain concepts. So, for example, as you've said, that you are able to develop a question that is fundamental enough for the sick animal for you to get a particular response. How did you understand how to decode the energies that you have been receiving from various species?
It started happening completely spontaneously when I was living in the States for a couple of years and doing my tracking training, following footprints in the sand. But because I grew up here in South Africa, I had no idea how to interpret or think about or analyze the tracks I was looking at. And when the instructor said, close your eyes and hold your hand over the track and see what happens, I thought, you're completely mad. But I did anyway, and in that case, I got mental images of a coyote's face, which is a little bit like our jackal. And I was shocked and horrified and thought I was hallucinating and mentally ill. I had no placing for this at all in my understanding. But I did my research and discovered this whole field of telepathic interspecies communication. Being the skeptic that I was and being very strongly rational with a very analytical mind, I decided to study this, and so I just used my leave days from my day job over the next 2 years to do various short courses, you know, 3 or 4 days at a time. The most important thing, though, for me was the practice with the case studies, and that is something that I recommend anyone does, to just practice with this. Again, Penelope Smith's website, animaltalk.net, has a wonderful array of self-teaching resources you can use.
My grandmother had a thriving garden in the house, outside the house. Mm. I mean, she had stuff coming, growing everywhere, right? And she too used to speak to her plants. I mean, literally speak to the plants and say, "Oh, how are you?" and have a conversation with the plants and spray something.
Exactly. You just start right at home. Start really close in. You know, when you're going sweeping with the broom or pouring something outside, just start with kindness. If we start with kindness, the rest falls into place. Notice the spider, notice the insect. If you're in a rush to leave and there's an insect stuck inside against the window, take the time. And if you don't have much time, I'm often leaving in a rush, I'm just always running late. What I do with that insect is I don't have time to go find a jar or a container and a piece of paper and chase them around like a mad woman. So with respect and with it has to be sincere. We can't give fake messages because animals pick up when we're being fake. But I'll say, please, I really want to help you, silently, of course. And I gently put up my hand and I send them a mental image. I say, I would love to get you to, you know, a feeling of freedom and then outdoors. And I picture the blue sky or the plants outside. And I say, to get there, please climb onto the hand. And I imagine, it's always important to imagine from their perspective. I imagine that I'm this tiny insect looking at my big old fat finger, you know, right in its face. And I imagine the insect moving forward as if it's my body moving forward to climb onto my finger. And I do that with feelings of peacefulness and reassurance. And 100% of the time, the insect does that. It climbs onto my hand. And then I say, hold on tight, and I move more slowly than I normally would to the door or the window and let them free.
Anna Breitenbach, interspecies communicator. How do people get to learn more, or find out from you, have more conversations with you?
And my website is animalspirit.org, and there's also a YouTube channel where I'm partway through creating a little Living Kindly series, just ways in which we can shift our perspective. Yeah. And our mind and heart set at home.
Anna Breitenbach, it was very interesting talking to you. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
All right. Anna Breitenbach.